From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
At times we have emotional moments. Sometimes it gets beyond emotion. That's the way this process works. But I just want you to remember, particularly the freshmen, we've had some moments where you've heard a lot of things and a lot of people have said some tough stuff on the floor. Did you hear that today? Did you notice the tenor of the debate and also the feeling that I had in this chamber today? It was pretty darn good. Because you know why? Because we worked it out. We worked out this very difficult day.
In the end, people came together, recognized that there are differences in the General Assembly, but there are differences that can be reconciled. Not easy. Sometimes it's pretty difficult. Sometimes it's painful. But if everybody comes to work with the goal of being reasonable and showing accomplishments, we have shown this session it can be done.
Just a few years ago, simply passing a budget was considered nearly impossible. You see a lot of heads nodding behind me. But this year, by passing a balanced budget, we've demonstrated that a progressive, forward-thinking vision is in perfect harmony with fiscal responsibility. Together, we just accomplished one of the most ambitious and consequential legislative sessions in this state's history.
Illinois has a new budget, the legislative session now complete. What happened? What still lies ahead? We'll get into all of that on our first show since the end of this session here on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, and with me in the studios of NPR Illinois on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield is Charlie Wheeler. He's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS, a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, IPR reporter Jacqueline Driscoll, and with us from the Capitol Building, IPR State House editor Brian Mackey. Our guests this week, joining us from Chicago and the Chicago Sun-Times, Tina Svandelis. And Tina, good to have you on once again.
Thank you.
Brian and Tina, I'll start with you. The budget has now been signed. It passed, of course, over the weekend, the last weekend, and the capital plan also getting the approval. Big deal for the state of Illinois, especially a state that just a couple of years ago couldn't get even the basics, a state budget, through.
Yeah, it certainly feels like we're returning to some semblance of a regular order. And I think it's worth noting that this, even though the Democrats have these large supermajorities, they could have rammed this thing through if they wanted to. They didn't. So there's even some whispering that it might have been engineered to sort of push things past the deadline so that, more people would have to vote on this to approve some aspects of these things. But, there were also tax increases here. So Democrats certainly want Republicans making these difficult votes as well. But, the Republicans say that they got some things out of this, too, that they were not even able to get during the 4 years of the Rauner administration.
And Tina, your thoughts on what took place, especially when it comes to the state budget?
I think Brian's right about how this is the first year of hopefully a trend of continuing to pass budgets, so people are very excited about that. It does increase spending by about $1 billion, which is a lot of money, clearly. So that's some of the criticism, is that in our state's history, we continue to just increase spending and get ourselves into trouble. Also, the pension crisis, obviously, and our debt backlog. So there are provisions in here to pay off a little bit, I believe $1.2 billion. That's not a little bit, that's a lot, through a bond authorization. But we're still dealing with, a remaining $5 billion in the bill backlog from the impasse. So we're definitely not out of the water, but people are a little bit relieved that we have a plan going forward.
And Brian, the governor was able to get this done, but he also is tapping the public quite a bit for fees and taxes that are going to help pay for some of these things. And also, he did it with, as you mentioned before, a supermajorities of Democrats. So maybe it wasn't so spectacular in the end. They were all a bit more on the same page.
Well, they were, but again, these things did have significant Republican votes on them as well. I have never seen, when the tax bill came up, I was stunned at how big the majorities were on some of those. This is the sort of thing where it's usually engineered to give the most people maximum political cover. So if it takes 60 votes to pass, it'll get 60 votes, maybe 61. If it takes, the veto-proof threshold 71, then it'll get at just that number of votes. But these had pretty broad majorities. And we should say, I think it's worth noting that the tax increases this year on consumers, for the most part, are to pay for long-term investments. These are capital construction programs. Either, you know, the gas tax is going to support massive highway and bridge rebuilding effort. Some of the video gambling, other things are going to support what's, you know, known as vertical capital construction, buildings on university campuses like the University of Illinois Springfield, which employs all of us except Tina on this panel today, but as well as state prisons and other state buildings like that. So this is not to fund the day-to-day operations of government. These tax increases that we're talking about for this year mostly are going to be funding long-term investments. Of course, we can get back to the graduated income tax, and that is definitely something that will be looking to increase operational spending year by year.
And with that still pending out there and maybe a couple of years from becoming a reality if it does, Charlie, that seems like this budget, at least to me, was a little surprising. I think I expected it to be tighter on spending than maybe what it is.
Oh, I look at it as kind of a return to normalcy, if you will, or as Yogi Berra would say, deja vu all over again. Because back in the ancient times when I was an active reporter with the Sun-Times, this is how legislative sessions would always end. There'd be bipartisan agreements. If we needed to raise money, we'd do it. We'd increase spending where we thought it was necessary. One of the reasons this is so big is because, particularly during the time of the budget impasse, a lot of agencies lost people. There were social service providers that went out of business because of the failure of the state to have money to pay them. And we were really hurting. So this is, as I see it, this is like it was back in the days of Jim Thompson and Jim Edgar, where the parties would work together. And we're attempting to help some of the agencies and some of the particular social service providers that suffered so dramatically during the two-year budget impasse. And had we progressed normally and had normal budgets over that period of time, I'm guessing this would not have looked quite so large in comparison.
Tina, we also mentioned there was a capital construction program that's been approved now, has made it through the legislature and got signed. So what allowed that to happen? What was, you know, we've struggled at times to get those programs approved in the legislature. There, you know, about every 10 years we see one come along. What allowed it to happen this time?
I think that it's the combination of the way that the taxes just went forward. As Brian said, like the taxes affecting most people are in the capital plan and not via the budget. So I think that it was a good organizational situation in which they divided up the vertical and capital, and it's just a logical flow. I also think, just politically speaking, that Pritzker took advantage of the fact that people like him. He's a good negotiator. He just kind of wanted this really good first session. There's definitely some noticeable things in the capital plan, though, for the roads and bridges, and that's that motor fuel tax, which we're going to see very, very soon. And that's increasing it by 19 cents per gallon. So anyone who's driving is going to notice that. And then there's a couple of other things like vehicle registration fees, which I never ever remember how much those are for myself until I do my taxes, but it's increasing it by $50. And then for commercial trucks by 100, and then there's an electric vehicle tax as well, which some people are upset about, but they don't really pay for gas. So we're kind of, all drivers are kind of hit with some of these fees.
Well, when it comes to capital, through the years, we've always heard the term pork projects being thrown about. Mm-hmm. Does it seem as though this plan has a lot less of that, or maybe more of that, or does it just depend on how you're looking at at it?
It depends on how you look at it.
You're looking at all this legislation, how many pages they are, 800 pages, 1,000 pages, 100%. There's mm-hmm. pork in here.
Mm-hmm. Charlie, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, kind of cynically, that pork is something in your district that in my district is a necessary public improvement. And there are specific line items in there allocating $50,000 here or $75,000 there or $250,000 somewhere else for specific projects. Plus there are some lump sum hundreds of millions of dollars that are to be used for, quote, infrastructure. Now, my understanding is that part of the deal was lawmakers were told you can designate, I don't know what the amount was, maybe it was a couple hundred thousand dollars for whatever you want in your district. And the premise is that you, as the senator or representative, probably have a better idea of what's needed in your district than somebody sitting in Springfield. And if I'm a legislator and I have to vote, as Tina said, to raise the, to basically double the state's tax on gasoline, the motor fuel tax, and I can go home and tell my constituents, this is exactly what we're going to get for that, it makes it a lot easier for me. And I think we can't underrate the importance of trust in the sense that we went throughout Blagojevich's years without a capital program because nobody trusted Blagojevich. Nobody would stick their neck out with the certainty that they could get a project. The same thing with Rauner. And so now you have a guy who, from all appearances, is very trustworthy. He's willing to negotiate. And if he tells a Republican, you vote for this and we'll take care of that need in your district. I mean, look at the example of someone like Margo McDermott, who's a representative from Okina, Republican, very conservative. She actually spoke in favor of this. Now, part of it is, I don't know if it's within her district, but it's certainly in Will County. There's I-80 has a bridge, two spans that go over to Des Plaines River, just on the south side of Joliet. And there were concerns a couple of months ago that they may have to shut down I-80 because of the fact that the bridge was so deteriorated. Now, that's something that's certainly important to the people in that area, and I'm sure that was one of the reasons why Representative McDermott voted for this.
Yeah, and we heard that again and again, Charlie, from other lawmakers, too. There's Terry Bryant, who's from Southern Illinois in Murfreesboro, talked about Southern Illinois University Carbondale has four buildings that need new roofs. State Representative Steve Reich from Woodstock, another Republican, said, you know, I don't think it's fair to say, please fix the roads in my district, but please get everyone else to pay for it. And, you know, you had Democrats trying to making this point. You know, they would say things like, okay, well, if you don't want to vote for these tax hikes, well, then, you know, can we take, you know, and just say that the spending won't happen in your district? And, you know, nobody volunteers for that. And in fact, at one point, as the, you know, we don't need to get into the minutia of all the twists and turns in the negotiations, but at one point, it seems like the House Republicans had a lot of their earmarked or pork projects stripped out of the capital plan, and that threatened to derail the whole set of negotiations. Now, was that a tactic to bring them back to the table? I mean, it all seemed to work out in the end. But, yeah, as, you know, like Charlie said, so you're, one person's pork is another person's necessary improvement.
Well, let me move on to another issue. It got a lot of attention during the legislative session. Actually, it's been getting attention for a few years now. Finally getting through the legalization of recreational marijuana. And Jacqueline Driscoll with us. She has covered that quite heavily this past spring. Any surprises, Jacqueline, from what we were expecting in this legislation?
I don't know. If you followed the legislation, you knew that it wasn't a done deal at any point throughout this legislative session. So we knew that we were expecting some changes, especially after the initial language was rolled out. I know that some people were particularly upset about the home grow policy changing.
And what is that?
Initially, the original bill allowed all Illinoisans 21 and older to grow up to 5 plants in their home. Now, this was per household. It wasn't per person. If you had multiple adults, it was still 5 plants. They did change that to only medical patients will now be allowed to grow up to 5 plants per household. The same rules there. The idea behind that is medical cannabis can be cost restrictive to people, so allowing them to grow it in their own home is hopefully allowing them to get access to necessary medication that they need, although the law enforcement community is very against this.
So it passes. The governor has indicated he's on board with it. We haven't, of course, he hasn't signed it yet, but do we have an idea of when this will actually be available as a product in the state of Illinois?
Well, after the governor signs it, it will have to go through an extensive rulemaking process, but they are offering early applications for the medical facilities, medical marijuana facilities that we already have here in Illinois. So in essence, product would be available on January 1st, 2020.
And one of the big questions I think out there all along was, you know, how much How much for taxes will we make from this, and how much will you know, people be willing to pay, and all of that type of thing? Right now, the budget, the way I understood it, does not rely on the marijuana sales in the next year's budget, at least. So we don't really know what the state's expecting, but at some point they should reap some benefits from that.
Right. They said in the first year they're only expecting really around about $40 million. But in a fully matured market, which will take some years to establish, they expect it to generate around $500 million
year. Before I move on from that, I did want to also ask about medical marijuana. You touched on that. This program still continues to exist in Illinois.
The program continues to exist, and it is now a permanent program. Previously, the initial program was a pilot program, but legislation passed out of this legislative session would make it a permanent program. It also adds a couple of conditions that would qualify a person for medical cannabis, and you no longer just have to see a physician. So it's expanding the people that can certify you for a medical cannabis card.
Okay. Let me move on now to gambling. That was another big package that was approved here. And Tina, we've been watching this for several months as well. In the end, were you surprised by anything that was in it, left out of it, any part of it?
I was personally surprised that it passed because it seemed like it was one of, just as the marijuana legislation, just as Jacqueline said, we just were waiting for some sort of feud or some sort of fight. And Mayor Lori Lightfoot, our Chicago's mayor, kind of inserted herself publicly a day before they passed it, I believe, and talked about some issues she had. She was concerned about slots being at Soldier Field and just too many and them being at such a giant location. And so basically everyone just kind of went behind the scenes to try to negotiate with her. And by the next day there was an agreement. So this kind of shows the power of Lori Lightfoot so far. It's huge. Like, I just spoke to the Illinois Gaming Board, a person on the Illinois Gaming Board, who just said, we don't have a lot of information. Read the bill. We're combing through the bill. We're trying to figure out what's going on. We don't know. We don't have a lot of timelines. And it's technically not signed into law, but clearly the governor will sign this because we need the money from this. So it's just interesting to me to see all the public push of after this passed, just where people want to see the casino. We have aldermen already, you know, telling us where they want it just to kind of get their voices heard. So it's going to be really interesting in the next 6 months, I think.
And we don't know where that casino in Chicago is going to go, but we do know it's going to be massive, right, when it does open?
Yes, and we know the governor this week, he was at our editorial board on Monday saying that he does not want it to be downtown. There were some people who wanted it at the Thompson Center, even jokingly. People are saying Lake Calumet. I've heard Chinatown. So both the mayor and the governor do want it in a place that's, you know, that will help minority communities. So that will be a factor for sure.
And sometimes with these types of bills, Charlie, I like to look and think, you know, what got it over the hump? Because, again, as Tina mentioned, if there was one big piece of legislation floating around that a lot of folks didn't think was going to make it through, this might have been the one, that it was going to get too heavy, too many things included in it. It got done at the end. You know, is that Pritzker's responsibility that he made it happen, or was it just something else that, you know, the appetite was there for more gambling?
Well, I think the appetite was there, particularly with the sports betting. Plus, don't forget that, what was it, 5-6 years ago, very similar legislation, minus sports betting, passed, and Governor Quinn vetoed it. So the elements of it in terms of where the new casinos are going to go, that was part of the old bill. One addition was having slot machines at the state fairgrounds for the state fair, allowing racetracks, in essence, to become casinos, and also increasing the number of positions for the existing casinos, the gaming positions. All of those elements work together. You got the horse racing people on board because they're going to see more revenues. And some of the money that's raised is dedicated in the bill to go to funds that help horse trainers, horse breeders, the agricultural industry in Illinois. You have the existing casinos getting extra places. Then you have the communities downstate that really are anxious. I saw a story the other day, I think it was the mayor of Waukegan, said how every day there's busloads of people from Waukegan who go up to Milwaukee to gamble in the Pottawatomie casino that's up there. And so the expectation is when they open one up in Waukegan, those people will stay home to do that.
And Brian, I don't want to put you on the spot with this, but let me ask, I mean, isn't there the possibility that we are becoming a little oversaturated with gambling, especially when you look at this package and all that it brings to Illinois as well?
I think that's got to be a concern. I mean, right now, I've talked to people in the video gambling industry who think that there's some sort of consolidation on the horizon there, some sort of shaking out. I know Chicago doesn't have video gambling at present, but you drive around a city like Springfield, and these little parlors are in strip malls everywhere, in just about every restaurant, in gas stations even down here. And I've said this stat before, so forgive me, listeners who've heard this. I sound like a broken record, but one of my favorite little statistics I heard in the last year came out of the legislature's nonpartisan budget forecasting arm. They do an annual report on gambling in Illinois, and they said that there are enough video gambling machines before this bill even passed, late last year, to be the equivalent of 24 extra land-based casinos over the 10 we have now. Well, this is going to add 6 land-based casinos. It's going to add gaming positions, you know, either spots at a blackjack table or slot machines at all the existing ones, racetracks. Not to mention the O'Hare and Midway Airport. I don't know if we mentioned that yet. That you're going to see a huge explosion in the number of opportunities for gambling. And you have to wonder, at some point, the market, you know, becomes saturated. We'll have to find out if this is it or not.
Well, I think one of the impacts is going to be some saturation, but what might mitigate it for Illinois is the fact that a lot of Illinoisans who now go across state borders to gamble will no longer do so. So if I'm one of the owners of the casinos up in northwestern Indiana, I got to really be concerned about a casino in the south suburbs and a casino on the south side of Chicago. Or if I mention, as I mentioned earlier, if I'm running the casino up in Milwaukee, I got to be worried if there's one in Waukegan. Or if there's a casino in Rockford, the folks in Winnebago County who now go north of the border to gamble probably will stay home. So there's going to be a big impact, true, but part of it is going to be borne by the states around us who've been benefiting off Illinois gamblers for years.
We'll talk more about this as the governor is expected, as was said, to sign this legislation. So in the coming weeks, we will discuss that a little bit more. I did want to save a couple of minutes here about for another big piece of legislation that got through. A lot of people didn't think this was going to happen either, and this had to deal with reproductive rights. It's called, I think, the Reproductive Health Act, it is called. And Tina, you've been following that. Give us just the overview of what it would do.
Sure. This is obviously because of abortion bans happening in other states. So this was intended to strengthen our current abortion laws. But what they tried to do, or what they did once it's signed, is they repealed the state's current abortion law, which was adopted in 1975. So what the sponsor said is that there were some really outdated things in there that they wanted to remove. There were things like spousal consent, criminal penalties for doctors who performed abortions, among other things. So they took out a lot of things. They replaced it with new language. There's also a definition of viability in health. So that says that abortions can be performed after viability only if it's to protect the health and life of the mother. And so that was a big debate, obviously, on both the House and Senate floor. You had a very pregnant Avery Bourne, a legislator, talking about, you know, late-term abortions and things like that. It was a very emotional debate. It was very lengthy. It's very sad. It's just one of those issues where you support it or you don't. There was never going to be any sort of negotiation there, but they got enough votes in both the House and Senate, and the Pritzker will definitely sign it. This is one of his big priorities, is to kind of expand reproductive rights in the state.
Well, we thought that this was tied up in really a subcommittee. Mm-hmm. It wasn't going to go anywhere. And Jacqueline, I wouldn't say the last minute, but the last few weeks of session, it started to break free there. People started to come out more publicly, push for this, and it got through. Some of the reason why that happened.
Well, Representative Kelly Cassidy, Democrat from Chicago, did sponsor this in the House, and her main reason was seeing states across the United States kind of enact or pass laws limiting rights to reproductive health care, placing abortion bans after 6 weeks or 8 weeks. We see in our neighboring state, Missouri, where there's only one clinic available, and they're at risk of losing funding or being there for much longer. So that was one reason that Representative Kelly Cassidy said that this was so important. And I think that that gave the conversation that needed push to get House Speaker Michael Madigan to get it out of committee.
Just a minute or two left here. I did want to also take some time to kind of just give an overview. I don't know if we want to give a grade necessarily. Charlie, I'll let you start with this. But J.B. Pritzker, we watched him go through his first session here after being elected and taking over. Your thoughts on the governor and what he accomplished?
Well, looking back on all the years that I've covered this stuff, I find it hard to come up with anybody who's done more in his first session than, unless maybe Dick Ogilvie back in 1969, which is before most of the people who are on this, all of the people on this panel were even born.
Not all of them, Charlie, but go ahead.
But in any event, yeah, it was very transformative. You look at all the things that happened. You know, Jacqueline was talking about the reproductive rights bill. Had that been the only major thing to come out of the legislature, that would have been big news. Or the gaming, or the marijuana, or the Tobacco 21, or just having a budget.
Minimum wage,
or having a budget that appears actually to be balanced and is going to bring down some of our bill backlog. All of that stuff is monumental. And as I say, it goes back to Dick Ogilvie, in my mind, who put through the first income tax 50 years ago and who totally reformed the way the state executive branch works in terms of creating a Bureau of a Budget, creating a budget that begins in the governor's office, having annual instead of biannual budgets. Those were all major changes. And I think what Pritzker's accomplished with the help of the Democratic majorities has made his first session comparable. And I think it's also important to note that Pritzker is able to negotiate with the other side. One of the things that brought Jim Durkin and the House Republicans on board was the fact that Pritzker was willing to support and back a number of initiatives that the business community wanted, stuff that they couldn't get in 4 years with Bruce Rauner. They got in a matter of a couple of days with J.B. Pritzker.
Let's go to our notes from the field. Jacqueline, we'll start with you.
After some new legislation that was adopted by the General Assembly, all Illinois employers, even workplaces with just one employee, will be required to conduct sexual harassment training.
Tina?
Yes, I have some unconventional notes from the field, which are literally from the field, in that I took several Uber rides this week to press conferences, and I was so impressed at the drivers knowing everything about everything that happened in Springfield. It's never happened to me ever. He knew about legalization. He knew about the abortion law, the income tax rate bill. I just think that we're just in this new span right now where people are really paying attention to what's going on in the state, and it made me really happy.
Brian?
Yeah, there was just this is one of these, I suppose, less consequential bills of the session. But any new construction or a business that remodels, this is restaurants, stores, things like that, any public building with a public bathroom has to have a diaper changing station, not only in the women's bathroom, which is a sad reality of how a lot of businesses locate their diaper changing stations today. Now they would also have to have it in the men's bathroom, or at least have a non-gendered bathroom or a family bathroom that would have one of these stations. So no more changing diapers on the floor of the men's room.
All right, that will do it for this week. And our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Jacqueline Driscoll, Brian Mackey, and Tina Svandelis with the Chicago Sun-Times. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or on the NPR One app. Production assistance provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.